Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
If she shows up, that would be wonderful. If she doesn't show up, that would be unfortunate.
Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh once said, quote, what happens at Georgetown Prep stays at Georgetown Prep.
The hearing questions need to have a frame, and the investigation is the best frame for that.
There are people that could be interviewed under oath about this.
Maybe she's asking for an investigation, so it's not just a he said, she said.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. Well, last week we got some beautiful words that deserve appreciation today. Filed, September 14th, 2018, clerk, U.S. District and Bankruptcy Courts for the District of Columbia. I want to be a clerk, rubber stamping a Paul Manafort plea deal. And this clerk does such a good job, too, getting a very even spread of bright, blood-colored ink, but also some fade in the last two lines and even kind of an old-time steampunk patch where the ink doesn't quite take. Maybe the stamp he used was the same holy one used for the plea deal of Vincent the Chin Gigante when he gave up the whole Italian mafia in 2003. I mean, come on. Clerks who stamp plea deals, forget about it. So this thing is worth reading, this whole plea deal, because like the Mueller appointing docs, it has such a wide scope. Basically, it's an AMA imperative for Manafort. And make no mistake, the Mueller team is going to ask Manafort anything. And this may yet serve as the death warrant for the Trump presidency. You know, I was going to add or maybe not and hedge, but today I'm among those, including many, many TrumpCast guests who think the Manafort testimony could be fatal to the presidency of Donald Trump. You know, I'm also one who thinks we really are in a more general twilight of the idols. The Me Too whistleblowers from Rose McGowan to Michaela Maroney, Mira Sorvino, Phyllis Golden Gottlieb, Stormy Daniels, Monica Lewinsky, Jenny Willoughby, Dylan Farrow, Christine Blasey Ford, those who for a year have taken out one petty tyrant after another for abuses of power and people, those whistleblowers and the journalists who've amplified their charges seem to me to be having an effect. That the Kavanaugh confirmation cakewalk was just stopped in its tracks by evidence that Kavanaugh, with an accomplice, the far-right writer Mark Judge, may have sexually assaulted Dr. Blasey Ford while they were teenagers. I mean, this is big news. Anarchists at the turn of the century, like that one who shot Henry Frick, they couldn't have toppled more powerful men than Me Too has. I know TrumpCast is not the place for naked sincerity and idealism. I do know that. But the sound of angry women who will not be slaves again is not faint. The old regime is structurally unsound. Something is changing and not incrementally, and the world feels very young suddenly. I'll be back to talk Kavanaugh with Michelle Goldberg, the incisive author and columnist for The New York Times, in just a minute. But first, Republican senators are on their heels with the whole ladies don't love Brett Kavanaugh factor. So they're calling around looking for lady character witnesses who might say Kavanaugh is tops. And of course, calls might be recorded for quality and training purposes.
Hello.
Hey, is Tina Dowling there?
This is Tina.
Hi, my name's Frank. Just calling with a few questions for you. You attended a school around Georgetown Prep between 1979 and 1983, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. And do you know Brett Kavanaugh?
No, I went to an all-girls school.
Oh, okay. Well, do you know the name Brett?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know the name Kavanaugh?
In the world,
okay,
yes.
Okay, great. So yeah, it's okay. So now you know. So Brett Kavanaugh. Yes or no, how would you describe Brett Kavanaugh? Okay, perfect. I'll take that as a yes. That's great. Thank you so much.
But wait,
okay, and then
but wait,
second question.
Understand.
On a scale of 1 to A, how likely would you be to recommend Brett Kavanaugh?
That's not a scale.
Well, you can pick either one.
Well, what is 1 and what is A?
All right, I heard A.
No, but I also said 1.
Okay, he is number 1. Wrote that down too. Seems like we covered our bases there. I'm holding up an ink blot test. What do you see in this when I say the word Brett Kavanaugh? What do you see?
We're on the phone. I can't see anything.
Okay, so nothing. Got it again.
No. I didn't.
No thing.
It's not that I can't see.
I'm just going to ask you straight up here. Do you think he did the thing?
What thing?
So if he were to do a thing, do you think he would have done it?
I'm sorry. Who is this? Who are you?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my name's Frank. I'm just calling. I'm an intern at Senator Grassley's office. We're just sort of making some calls.
Okay.
So do you think that Brett Kavanaugh could do the thing if he, you know?
What thing?
Yeah, it's just sort of yes or no.
I don't know what I'm answering, so I can't say yes or no.
Oh, heard a no. Okay,
no.
So he didn't do
the
thing.
I didn't say
no. Okay, great. Thanks so much.
No,
that's
no,
all
no,
we
no.
needed.
I didn't say
all
no.
Right, take care.
No.
Our sketch today was improvised in our studio by Kate James and Asher Perlman.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Joining me in the studio is Michelle Goldberg. She's a columnist over at the New York Times. And we're here to chat about Brett Kavanaugh. Michelle, thanks for being back in your home territory, your original home base, Slate. It's good to see you here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Like so many people, I read your awesome Times column about Kavanaugh called Boys Will Be Supreme Court Justices. And I really loved this turn it took. Well, first, I like that you just start out by saying, I believe Christine Blasey Ford. And yeah, what gave you the confidence to say that out of the gate? Like to really dispense with all the like allegations, the words alleged?
You know, I mean, obviously this is subjective, but it rang so true to me, both the story itself and also when I think about if I was in her position, what would I do? This nightmare that you have this formative traumatic experience and then you watch this like entitled prick, you know, rise through the ranks and, you know, eventually be in line for a possible Supreme Court nomination and thinking, you know, you don't want to come forward. You don't want to blow up your life. You don't want to subject yourself to what she's now been subjected to, but you do feel like you can't just sit back and watch it happen. So what do you do? You know, I'm not saying I know that he did it, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to say that anybody can claim to know what happened, but it's just her story is so credible. And for her to have any sort of malign intent, the amount of forethought, right? I mean, that she started this devious plot 6 years ago when she first started telling people that this happened to her,
right?
Because she somehow anticipated that this moment would come.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is just that we know that Brett Kavanaugh is a liar. You know, he lied about all sorts of things regarding his past, his role in like the Pickering nomination, other things that he worked on in the George W. Bush administration.
And lied and withheld. Like people keep saying he can remember beyond a shadow of a doubt that he wasn't at the party where Christine Blasey Ford said she was assaulted, but he can't remember one single thing about what he did during the George W. Bush administration.
And there was also that moment, right? That moment when Kamala Harris asked him about whether he had spoken to anybody at Mark Kasowitz's law firm. And I don't remember what the law firm is called, but he made this sort of like exaggerated show of trying to remember the name. Kasowitz.
Yeah.
And it's like his best friend works there.
And yes. And the like, well, I need a name here. I mean, he hasn't been especially good in the off screen or out of the room or in the room.
Right. And I've been trying to figure out why his poll numbers are so low, given, you know, the polarization in this country is such that you would just think that they would be pretty stable.
Yeah.
Like Trump's.
Yeah.
And I don't know this, but I do wonder if there is some segment of the population that just sees in him this sort of like callow, entitled rich kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was sort of, the more I heard men and women kind of parse this Georgetown prep story, that I mean, I guess I do kind of want to get in the weeds with you on it. But the more I heard people parsing that, the more I thought, like, sadists and have had their penny loafers on our throats, all of us, all along, that look like Brett Kavanaugh. And, you know, at the University of Virginia, those were the guys that I flagged to avoid, the way my father in Catholic school knew the priest to avoid. Like, you just knew from the way their complexion, their whatever, their drinking habits, their comportment, their whatever, that you were not safe in their presence.
So it's funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday about Brett Kavanaugh's fraternity at Yale, and somebody who was, I think, a year or two younger than him, nothing to do with Brett Kavanaugh personally.
Yeah.
But he was saying that was the fraternity that when we walked past would throw things at us and be like, hey, faggot.
Yeah. I mean, I yes. And I think maybe part of the poll numbers is, I don't know if it's controversial to say this, but I feel like these assailants, rapists, harassers also metaphorically assail, rape, harass the men around them too, by like enlisting them in complicity. And that most guys, I think our producer Jason was saying, you know, there are guys like that in the locker room, and you're like, you don't want to get near them, because they, the way they talk about women, the way they try to almost like groom people to be their wingmen, laugh at their jokes, and, you know, and be the Mark Judge in this equation, the far right writer for the Daily Caller. I guess he's written a few books about his own misspent youth, to be that guy that like eggs them on. Like, that's another, the person who keeps your secrets is another person that you've been harassing all this time. It seems like Mark Judge is willing to keep keeping Kavanaugh's secrets.
Right. And not willing to testify under oath, which is really telling, right? I mean,
yeah.
Which is enormously telling.
Yeah.
I mean, people keep talking about the fact that, and we can talk more about this, I guess, that Blasey Ford is hesitating to talk on Monday. And I understand why she is, although I really hope that she does it, even though it's been an unfair process and mm-hmm. it's stacked against her. I hope that she does it. But there should be, I would think, an equal amount of attention to the fact that the one person who's said to be a witness is also refusing to test, mm-hmm. is refusing to testify mm-hmm. under oath. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've sort of been, I posted on Twitter something about the weird locution of my rape and my rapist that I know a lot of Me Too people use. And I guess I've been on feminist Twitter too long, or on just talking to feminists too long, but I just didn't think that at this late date that like would drop like a bomb on Twitter at all, or that I would get like condolences in my DMs. But it was only because I did this thing. I don't know what your experience is, but I did this thing where I was like, I wonder if that guy was like such a jerky Kavanaugh person. I wonder if he ever ran for office. And if so, what I would do if I were Christine Blasey Ford. That is what went in my head, putting his name into Google. And anyway, then I was thinking about this like weird relationship, leaving aside the incidents that I think most of us have been through, some version or another of them. Leaving those aside, there is this particular like danse macabre between the whistleblower figure, so like Christine Blasey Ford, Stormy Daniels, you know, Monica Lewinsky, and the professional man, where we're in a newly professional relationship with each other, you know, like that, like Christine Blasey Ford has a lawyer, Stormy Daniels has a lawyer. Like, this isn't like writing for the school newspaper anonymously about some like mixed date rape thing. This is like this professional thing that happens in public life. And in a way, you're both a witness. You're a witness and a whistleblower as much as you are a victim, talking about your emotional experience.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think that she's right. What she wants to speak to is his character as opposed to what he did to her and what that should cost him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm somewhat sympathetic to this argument about, you know, what you are at 17 isn't what you are at whatever. What is he, 53? But the thing, two things about this drive me crazy. One is that it's used so selectively on the right, right? Like, you never see it kind of extended to the many, many people who are on sex offender registries for crimes that they committed when they were under 18, crimes that are like often less serious than what he's accused of.
Right.
Right. This idea of like boys, that was to me the boys will be boys. Like only a certain class of men get that kind of indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Others are sort of branded men at 14 or 15.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
and held responsible for the rest of their lives. But the other thing is that it's not just what he did all those years ago, because if it's true, he's lying now. He's like re-victimizing her now. He's kind of putting her through this really grotesque process. And he's lying to all of us, right? If what she's saying is true, then he's kind of getting away with it again as he prepares to like literally sit in judgment of all of us.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the talk has been, what could he have done? What should he have done? What are in the intervening years, what might have a man of good character have done, leaving out that we don't know what happened, but we certainly know she has this particular testimony and this experience. And when it came to his attention, what could he have done? To that end, Caitlin Flanagan wrote what I thought was actually a pretty extraordinary piece about, I don't know if you read it, but yeah, about an assailant when she was a teenager who went on to apologize to her like quite explicitly and semi-publicly in the form of a yearbook inscription, and then what he approached her years later to reaffirm that he had made a mistake, she didn't deserve it, confirm that that experience had actually happened. I mean, it isn't total rocket science. Like, sex is confusing, but like when you cross a line, you probably know it, own it, take responsibility for it, try to make amends for it.
Well, and I would say, I mean, it's funny, I've seen some pushback to Caitlin Flanagan's essay from people saying the standard for judging Kavanaugh can't be like something similar happened to me. And I think that on the one hand, I understand that. But on the other hand, I think that there's a reason why women have an intuition about this case. And it's because it seems so familiar to a lot of us, right? I mean, it just seems, and unlike the Duke LaCrosse case or the Virginia
gang rape.
The Virginia gang rape, which was very
libel,
which was lurid and extreme and sort of hard to and, you know, kind of caught people's attention for that reason, because it was so outside of the norm, right? This is just like so familiar that it seems just like, I think, inherently plausible to a lot of us. And so then the question is, you know, I kind of think he probably could have gotten away with it if he had just said something like, you know, I have only the foggiest memories of what happened when I was 17. Mm-hmm. But if I ever did anything to make somebody feel like threatened or unsafe or humiliated, I'm so sorry.
I mean, sometimes I think, like, imagine that it's a different crime. Like, imagine if you accidentally years ago, or someone said, you hit me with your car and I broke my hip, and here's the hospital record and here's one witness. Is there any grounds where you talk about intention? Like, I was late for work and I was driving fast and I didn't notice. And like, why are you in your experience if something other than rape? And it makes the person look much, much, much guiltier. Let's say he doesn't remember it at all, and he was in the habit of like rough, coercive seduction. Then what if he's just reminded of something that happened a long time ago when he had different sexual habits and, you know, was a more brutal testosterone-y person? Why can't he just be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, I was such a horrible person then, and I'm so glad you brought this to my attention. Like, well, never happen? Well, is it because he's Brett Kavanaugh and up for the Supreme Court? But why don't some of these other guys say it?
So, well, I think he's not going to say it. I feel like if he was the kind of person who said it, then he wouldn't be the kind of person that, like, you and I maybe suspect that he is.
Right, right.
And I actually think it's probably possible that he doesn't remember it. And that could go a couple different ways, right? It could be because he's innocent. It could be because this wasn't that exceptional of a night, which is, you know, right? It was a huge deal to her. It was this like pivotal moment.
Right.
If for him, it was just another Saturday.
Right.
You know, in some ways, that's even more damning.
Right. But anyway, the reason I think the Caitlin Flanagan point lands with me is that because you have people on the right saying, and some people even sort of centrist saying, what you did at 17 shouldn't bind you now. Discussing the intervening years is what we have, and also his behavior now. So, like, I also think I want to think of the Me Too accusers more as whistleblowers than as, because they're talking about a system, Georgetown Prep, a system of like promotion and protection that is the secular world's answer to the priest, to the Catholic Church. of people who move him around, and they, you know, they're all members of the Republican Party. Mark Judge, the, you know, the other witness there, is even to the right of Kavanaugh. He's written ridiculous things about, you know, he's like the voice, one of the voices of latter-day misogyny. And I mean, I don't know, some of these women, certainly a Rose McGowan figure, are more like Aaron Brockovich types or Jeffrey Wigand types than they are like someone sniveling about their own experience and you have to honor my experience and whatever. Like, somehow I don't like all the condolences around it. I like more, or I want to understand more how this is a battle in professional space.
Well, no, I think that that's, I mean, one of the things that's been, I mean, maybe I knew it on some level, but it's been sort of revealed and in some way radicalizing, is just that, yeah, like you see the kind of very starkly the like system that produces our, that produces our leaders and their kind of sense of impunity, right? I mean, it's fascinating that it's not even just Kavanaugh who went to this particular high school, right? Gorsuch went to the same high school,
right?
You know, and so you look at this high school where it's like the children of the elite go and sort of marinate in their own privilege and connections and, you know, again, develop this sense of entitlement to power, understanding of how the paths to power work. And, you know, and then you see it, and then you see like the vicious yearbook quotes from a Mark Judge, you know, some women should be struck regularly like gongs. And you just think like, yes, this is where our terrible, corrupt elite comes from.
And then what about, I mean, we're days after this, but it's still stunning. What about the 65 women who testified to Brett Kavanaugh's character? So just even having at hand that you could go back to your Georgetown prep single sex days, and that even just having that as a setting to think, well, I'll just find people from my camp, my boarding school, you know, my cotillions, my insert thing that rich people do here, my yachting club or whatever, Thurston Howell the third thing is in my parody. And I'll get them to say, you know, he was a great guy or whatever. That's not a setting many of us have. It's just not something that you go to. Like, you're accused of a crime, right? Just to suddenly be like, I'll find people from that period who are women. Because, like, women would know if he's a rapist or not, and then have them sign this bizarro document, let alone the timing on the document, and think that that exonerates him. And then it looks like, I mean, the women won't, what, say, so very few of the women will agree to discuss the document again.
I mean, right, because someone just came to them apparently and said, will you sign a document about what a great guy Kavanaugh was,
right?
Not like, will you sign a document about how there's no way Kavanaugh could have been an attempted rapist, which is a different thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, the most suspicious thing is that they had that thing. I don't know. I mean, maybe I've seen this dismissed as conspiratorial and people say it came together very quickly. And apparently, you know, I'm sure that that could happen with social media, but it seemed to come together really quickly. And again, maybe I just don't understand that social world. Like, I couldn't find 65 people that I knew
at boys' school
as a teenager. Like,
he was at a boys' school. I mean, it is, but I want to talk about, if he does get confirmed, why you and your piece suggest that might not be such a bad thing for the wider questions, the wider problems.
Right. So I don't want to sugarcoat this. I mean, I do think it's a bad thing, right? It's an extremely bad thing. But I think that it's compared to what? Because I assume that if he doesn't get confirmed, they will cram through somebody else before January, even if Democrats
take the Senate,
which is pretty unlikely. But even if they do, they're going to have this lame duck session. I can't imagine that they let these 3 months go to waste. I just can't conceive of a situation in which they do that. So they cram somebody else through, you know, somebody like Amy Coney Barrett, who is in some ways more conservative than Kavanaugh, particularly on social issues, although he's really conservative, but who puts a sort of softer, feminine, motherly face on what they're about to do to us. You know, I mean, so to me, it's not that I think that there's like a silver lining. I think that it's going to be really, really bad, whoever's on there. But I do think that, you know, I'd almost rather lose Roe. If we're going to lose Roe versus Wade and we're going to have, you know, state mandated forced birth in this country, I would rather have it come from, just like be obvious about the like brute imposition of patriarchy. You know, I would rather have it obvious that it is the grab him by the pussy president mm-hmm. gets to ram through the accused attempted rapist with the help of his all male Senate Judiciary Committee. And this is what they are going to do to us.
Right. Sounds like a lot of fun. You're right. It's very liberating. The lesson of this period has definitely been, what is it to have exterminationist misogyny and racism made manifest? Like,
right. And who are, yeah, I mean, basically, like, yeah, it becomes clear, like, okay, they really are who we, in our worst moments, thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so that in some ways is easier to deal with than this, like, faux concern mm-hmm. with women and children, right?
Yeah.
That it's really just, nope, grab them by the pussy.
So since you wrote your piece, somewhat to my frustration, not that it matters, but Blasey Ford has equivocated a little on whether she's going to testify on Monday or whether she wants an FBI investigation to precede that testimony if she gives it. And also, she's a little bit disappeared, right? Like, she's been in and out and we don't know where her lawyer is. And there's a question that she might feel genuinely in danger, or she's certainly being harassed, or this is very costly to her financially and emotionally and to her reputation. What do you think is going to happen?
So I have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, I think that she was sort of allowed her, or her lawyer maybe allowed her to be maneuvered into a bad political situation in which they sort of invited her to testify, assuming that she wouldn't. Mm-hmm. The lawyer says, no, she will testify. And then Chuck Grassley says, okay, we've scheduled it for Monday. Maybe she'll be there. And it's sort of, she's given this basically ultimatum, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm. either testify under these conditions, which is these two, which is you and him, right? Mm-hmm, so they're not going to subpoena Mark Judge. They're not going to do any sort of other additional thorough fact finding. You know, so it's this, like, process that's totally stacked against her. And, you know, either agree to it or else just kind of show that this has never been, that you've never been acting in mm-hmm. good faith.
And Trump has piled on to that right. measure with Grassley by saying, I want to hear her, as if it's like, I believe women kind of thing.
And so I think, you know, it's totally legitimate for her to feel sandbagged. I mean, that's what's mm-hmm. happened. At the same time, I really hope that as unfair as the process is, that if they do go through with the hearing, she does show up, you know, because otherwise I think that they will just declare victory and push him through. And so, I mean, basically, I feel like she's being asked to make a pretty profound sacrifice for her country. And, you know, and so it's hard to say that she should do that or that we have any right to ask her to do that. But I hope she does it.
One last question, even though that's a great place to end. Collins and Murkowski, like, where do you think the would-be swing voters who happen to be women are leaning? Like, how are they affected by Blasey Ford?
I mean, my assumption has always been that they want to vote for him and just, like, don't want and are kind of resistant to anything that's going to make that politically difficult for them to do that and still maintain their mm-hmm. reputation for some degree of independence, mm-hmm. right? So they sort of have to make a show of reconsidering and taking her seriously. But, I basically think that they, at the end of the day, something extraordinary would have to happen to for them not to fall in line.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see if something extraordinary has happened. And thank you so much for being here, Michelle.
Oh, thanks so much.
And that's it for today's show. Before we take off, I want to quickly plug our live show that's happening next week in Austin, Texas. It's on Saturday, September 29th at the Capitol Factory, where we'll be for cocktail hour as well. So come hang with us. Tickets are on sale at slate.com/live. Again, that is slate.com/live. Trumpcast is produced by Jason DeLeon. Thanks again to Kate James and Asher Perlman. And I'm Virginia Heffernan. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen. And her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.